The Guardian.
Hello and welcome to the Guardian Football Weekly. Chelsea 1, Manchester United 0, the greatest FA Cup final since Arsenal beat Chelsea way back in 2017. As Jose Mourinho criticises his opposition for playing defensive football. Elsewhere, football managers, lots of vacancies, but who will fill them? Plus a whole host of emotional departures in Europe, Iniesta, Torres, Buffon, plus great fun in the race for the Champions League spots in Italy, and Michel Platini proving he's very much as we expected. All that and more in today's Guardian Football Weekly. We have a panel today. Barry Glendenning.
Hello.
How are you?
Not too bad, thank you.
You look wonderful.
Cheers.
Priya Ramesh, how's life?
Good, thanks. How are you?
Yeah, I'm marvellous. Thanks very much. And Will Unwin, a pod debut.
Yeah, no, and right at the end of the season, so I really built up to it.
Absolutely. Well, welcome. I'll just cross off some... Your full name, please?
Will Unwin.
Age?
30.
Team?
Man City.
Favourite ever goal?
Jamie Policone goal against QPR, 98. Wonderful.
Great moment.
Yeah.
And you interviewed him recently about it.
I did, yeah. And he's, you know, quite happy to talk about it now, whereas back then it was a bit of a sore point for him and every City fan. But, you know, no longer do they want to kill him. They want to embrace him.
Yeah.
He's a cuddly man to embrace.
In the interview, he sort of said, if he hadn't scored that own goal, am I reading this correctly, that they wouldn't have gone down and then they wouldn't have had that glorious rise with Paul Dickov's goal. So essentially, they wouldn't be where they are now.
Exactly. I thank him for his involvement in Manchester City Football Club and what he's brought to us now, that every goal scored by Aguero, Jesus, David Silva, Kevin De Bruyne is all down to Jamie Pollock heading the ball over his own goalkeeper 20 years ago.
Does he get assists for those?
Well, he got a full fancy points for that goal, didn't he? Because he did the assist and he scored the header.
Should as get
well.
Like a 10% on anything Man City go on to achieve goes back to Jamie Pollock.
Yeah, or the City shirt should just have his face.
Yeah, it's like Juan Mata's Common Goal charity that essentially 1% of all the players' earnings now go to Jamie Pollock for Manchester City. It's a good system.
It is. Right, the FA Cup final, Chelsea 1, Manchester United 0, Eden Hazard's penalty. Barry, did you enjoy watching this football match?
I didn't. It was slow, ponderous, attritional, much like everyone predicted it would be. Jose Mourinho was very upset afterwards that Chelsea played in such a negative fashion, and I thought it was very unfair of them not to play the way he wanted them to. But you know, they sat back deep. There was no pressing. Ander Herrera tried to man-mark Eden Hazard with very little success. Hazard was pretty much one of, possibly the only player on the field who played with a bit of freedom of expression, and you know, he was repeatedly fouled but managed to get the penalty and score it, and that settled the game. Mourinho seemed to blame United's defeat on both Chelsea's tactics and the fact that he didn't have a big Belgian man to lump the ball towards to get past the low block, which Chelsea were very cynically playing. So it was not a cup final that will live long in the memory. Chelsea fans won't care, probably, because they won. And Manchester United fans are left to wonder, you know, some of them continue to defend Mourinho blindly because he's their manager. I've noticed Marcus Rashford is getting a lot of criticism for not being good enough, apparently. But he has clearly regressed under Mourinho's stewardship of the club, and his confidence is shot.
I just find it a bit funny that it's actually not implausible that Mourinho could have taken credit for Chelsea's win by saying, I instilled this style of play at the club over so many years. This is why they won against my team. This is my football heritage. No, but I just think it was really ironic, given the way that he reacted after the Europa League final last year. And it was like, oh, there's no space for poets in football, and you have to be cynical to win. And then now he's coming out and he's pulling this card. He's pulling the whole, they didn't play good football, and if I'd played that way, blah, blah, blah. But, well, you have played that way. And you know, you have won, and people have given you credit for it. It's just ridiculous.
Isn't he just playing us, Will? I mean, I feel he can't. He's got to be in on this now, you know?
Yeah, he's become a parody of himself. It's a bit perverse nowadays. Both teams set up exactly the same way, pretty much, and the defensively both very sound sides, and Chelsea's attacking players just had a bit more to give. Which, you know, it's Mourinho's own fault that Rashford, Sanchez and Lingard look bereft of confidence and bereft of any sort of guile in the final third. The fact that Rashford is there to replace Lukaku, and, you know, he's a different player, but Mourinho has no answer to it. He's just like, well, you see why Lukaku plays every week, because when I play Rashford, he's terrible. It's like, well, they're slightly different players. Maybe if you're a better tactician, you might be able to change your team's dynamic, but he doesn't seem to be able to anymore. And, yeah, some of the comments afterwards are just a bit grim.
And you've made this point before, Barry, about making players better, or at least making them confident, making them look like they're enjoying them. You know, what's the point after all, you know, if you're not going to enjoy this?
Well, they don't necessarily have to enjoy it, but apart from Jesse Lingard, it's difficult to think of any Manchester United player that's kicked on under Mourinho. You know, Romelu Lukaku has been consistently good most of the time, but, you know, almost all of them seem to have regressed, and the blame for that has to be with Mourinho, you know, whether it's the manner in which he psychologically tortures some of them, the coaching methods. It's just strange. And, you know, if you look across the city, Manchester City, almost every single Manchester City player has improved under Pep Guardiola, you know, and that's the difference between the two, or one of the big differences between the two. And he's thrown, Mourinho spent, was it, $290 million since arriving at Old Trafford, and the two players he seems to be most reliant on are the two big Belgians who were there before he arrived. And it just seems weird.
Here's a quote from Jose. Every defeat hurts. But for me personally, the ones that hurt less is when you give everything and you go out without any regrets. So I prefer to lose like today than to lose like we did, for example, at Newcastle. Just to give an example of this season, I leave my players happy with them. But, I mean, he's bordering on either being deluded or he's playing us. I'm not sure how.
I'm pretty sure, but I feel like he's... You know these massive media meetings we have about when we decide who to be biased against? Yeah. I'm pretty sure he's in on that. He's probably there in like a really big glasses and trying to pretend to be someone else. But it's just really weird because the Man United, the first half was just pretty horrendous. I mean, Herrera was playing so deep that it was almost a three-man backline with Phil Jones and Smalling. And all Eden Hazard had to do is move from the left wing to the right wing, which is where he was when he picked up the ball for the goal, for the run that he had straight at Phil Jones. And that was it. And there's no sort of, there was a sort of gap between what Herrera was supposed to do and follow him and the fact that no one else in the team was instructed to either move closer to him if he moved somewhere else or nothing like that. And he was just given a great ball by Fabregas and then just given a free run at Phil Jones, who very strangely actually did really well in pushing him into a really tight angle where if Hazard had gotten a shot away, De Gea would have been odds on to save it or parry it away. But then he had to go and stick a leg out, and just very odd Man United performance and just so lacking in any spark or initiative in attack.
Eden Hazard with a free run on Phil Jones bodes well for the World Cup, doesn't it?
Also, equally, Mourinho signed a contract extension just back in January. I mean, I can't quite find the reasoning behind Man United giving him a contract extension when he's gone trophy-less in his second season and isn't really producing the sort of performances with the team or showing the signs that this is going to become a good project and will bear fruit over the next 3 years. You look at the targets they have for the summer. They're all, you know, players, Willian, Alderweireld. Alderweireld is really good. And Willian, I think, is good, but I still have my doubts about. And they're both going to be 30 or nearing 30 in the near future. And you think, well, where's the long-term thinking in that? Where's the future in that?
Were Chelsea good? I thought Bakayoko, who's, by all accounts, everybody who I've heard has basically described him as the worst footballer ever this season. I actually thought he looked quite good on at the weekend.
I think there wasn't a massive amount of difference between the two teams, but the Chelsea players turned up and gave that extra 5% to get the better of them. You know, Kante, Bakayoko was superb in midfield, and dominated against a, you know, a slightly grim looking Herrera and Pogba, who didn't really get into the game for, you know, anything more than about 5 minutes in the second half. And that, you know, that was the key for them. They just had a little bit extra. They had a bit of, you know, they had Hazard won the game by being dynamic for 10 seconds of the match, whereas no one in the United team was dynamic, you know, for more than about 2 seconds. And that was mainly when they were trying to get subbed off. It was Chelsea were a little bit better, and they're not even playing for their manager. You know, Willian's doing Instagrams where he puts trophies over the manager, and, you know, even they can perform in a Wembley final.
I wonder if that's a subliminal message to actually back up Conte, who said he's a serial winner, by just placing trophies on him.
Yeah, well, yeah, and it also, you know, and they showed that Conte showed he can make tough decisions. He put Courtois in over Caballero after he'd played in every game, and, you know, and backs up his idea of being a serial winner, whereas Jose Mourinho is playing Phil Jones over Eric Bailly because Phil Jones is going to the World Cup. Which is an odd reason, because England aren't going to win the World Cup unless something miraculous happens.
You don't know that.
I'll bet you £15. And, you know, it's a perverse idea that you're going to play someone because they're going to the World Cup and everyone isn't. It's madness.
Olivier Giroud has won 4 FA Cups in the last 5 years, which is more than Spurs in the last 50 years, which has made Chelsea and Arsenal fans kind of happy. So what is this? Do we think this is Conte's last game, Barry? Do we think this is Eden Hazard's last game? It's nice for Chelsea to win a trophy, but given what's happening with their ground and the fact they're not in the Champions League, I'd be slightly worried if I was a Chelsea fan.
Also, because their sugar daddy currently isn't allowed into the country.
Well, absolutely.
Due to unexplained visa problems. So that's an interesting one. He wasn't at Wembley for the game. I think it will be Conte's last match. And if it isn't, it'll certainly be Willian's last match after his Instagram japes. And if I was a Chelsea fan, I would be absolutely terrified that Eden Hazard is going to leave, because I suspect he'll have a very good World Cup and Real Madrid. I can imagine him in a Real Madrid shirt. I can imagine him lining up for them. I can imagine him playing.
He's also never made a secret of saying Zidane is his big inspiration and that he likes him. And Zidane's made it no secret to, you know, say that Hazard is a great player and he really likes them. So you can definitely see it happening. And I'm just wondering, in terms of Chelsea's recruitment, they need some good attackers, because the attack for a good few seasons now has been almost entirely dependent on Hazard. So even if Real Madrid throw, you know, a lot of money at them, Chelsea have a bit of a tough situation in convincing attackers to join them over the likes of City and Liverpool next summer.
So Conte's not going to be there. Who's going to who could be the Chelsea manager?
Maurizio Sarri was reported to be in talks, and there were some rumours that he might be able to convince Higuain. I don't think that's going to happen. But yeah, it'll be interesting to see who Chelsea go for.
Pogba went on Instagram to say, "Mercy to all the supporters for the season with us, for being part of my life and letting me enter yours." So the rumour mill has gone that he's going. You sort of imagine he'll still be there, doesn't he? As producer Jonathan says, was it Mercy, thank you, or just Mercy? Help me. Alvaro Morata shouted something quite interesting as he went into the dressing room. Which is not really for broadcast, but he just shouted, "Let them all suck," and then what you'd say on the end of this.
To whom was he referring?
I presume he was referring to the opposition.
Okay.
Well, because there was that saga this summer where initially Chelsea was supposed to sign Lukaku and Man United was supposed to sign Morata, and he'd apparently dyed his hair red for it, and it went the other way.
Did he changed the dye, unlike Pogba, who went, you know... the Scottish Cup final, Barry, was that any better?
No.
Just get rid of all the cup finals.
No, it wasn't. It was slightly more entertaining, but it was very one-sided. You know, the three big events I watched on Saturday, the Royal Wedding was, by a considerable distance, the most entertaining. That is not something I thought I'd be saying this morning. But, yeah, Celtic were just too good for Motherwell. I think everyone was expecting them to be too good for Motherwell. Motherwell, I suspect, didn't give a very good account of themselves, because they must be capable of better to have got that far. And they also made the League Cup semi-final. But they didn't play well, and they started okay. It was quite chaotic opening 10 minutes. Then Celtic scored a wonderful goal from Callum McGregor, you know, that just beautiful strike on the half volley into the top corner with his weaker right foot when the ball dropped to him. And after that, it was just one-way traffic. And the longer it went on, the more physical Motherwell got. They were sort of just persistently fouling. Really picking on Kieran Tierney as well, the young Celtic wing back, who's a terrific player and lots of big clubs are interested in him. He was outstanding. James Forrest was outstanding. Callum McGregor was good. The Motherwell defence just could not handle Moussa Dembele at all, and I'm not sure how he didn't get on the score sheet. You know, he had a lot of great chances. Trevor Carson, the Motherwell keeper, had a good game, and but for him, it would have been a cricket score. But Celtic have now won the double treble, which no Scottish team has ever done before. And they're in this position, which I suppose they have been for years. They're just way too good for everyone else in Scotland, but not good enough to compete in the Champions League. Now, their fans will, as they always do when I point this out, say that it's not a level playing field because they don't have enough money to compete against the best Europe. But their fans, weirdly, don't have anything to say about the fact that they're so much richer than all the other teams in Scotland. But that's okay, apparently. That kind of unfairness is all right.
Craig says, Celtic's double treble. What does that mean for Brendan Rodgers' standing in the English game? Is his stock higher or lower than when he left Liverpool?
It's hard to know, really. You know, the double treble is undeniably impressive. He's won every domestic tournament Celtic have been in since he went there, you know. Would it mean he'd walk into a big job in England? I don't think so.
But you wonder, would Brendan Rodgers feel a bit, whether he wants the Arsenal job or not, miffed that, say, Arsenal would go for someone who's never managed a football match over him?
I think that the concept of experience when it comes to, you're obviously referring to Mikel Arteta.
I am.
I get experience makes a difference, but equally I think what Arsenal need now is a radical change, and literally the most radical change you can get is by starting with an absolutely fresh, clean slate. And the way you do that is through Arteta, who's never imaginable. We don't know what he prefers in terms of tactics. He's very much an unknown quantity, and I think that's not a bad place for Arsenal to start with, especially given they're also switching to the sort of continental style of having a director of football and you know, everything sort of compartmentalised within the football club. I think it might be... I'm not entirely sold on Brendan Rodgers, to be honest.
See, if it was really radical, it would be someone who's never even been near football at all. You know, let's see if we're going to make it just absolute, just totally left field. I don't know, Fraser Crane, get him in, see what happens. While we were on Fitbar,
also in the cup final, was Celtic won 2-0 in the end. They kind of very much took their foot off the gas in the second half and sort of meandered through with that. Motherwell did have a good chance, sort of 10 minutes from the end, that if had they scored, would have put the cat among the pigeons a bit. But unfortunately, they hit the post or hit the crossbar with a free kick. Carroll Biggerlemana. And there was the comedy sight of a linesman falling over his own feet. And it was none other than Douglas Ross, the Conservative MP for Moray, who's also a match official in his spare time.
Biggest cheer of the day, yeah. I imagine. Well done to Livingston, managed by David Hopkin. That's where he is.
Okay.
They completed an aggregate victory in the Premiership playoff final to secure successive promotions and relegate Partick Thistle. So congratulations to them. The FA Trophy, while we're on finals, Brackley Town won the FA Trophy for the first time. They dramatically beat Bromley on penalties. Substitute Andy Brown converting the decisive spot kick to win the shootout 5-4. They were 1-0 down in the 90th minute. And then Roger Johnson, who stayed, I think, was it at Birmingham for a bit too long?
I think he stayed over a bit too long.
I remember Mark Noble calling him the relegator when he was at West Ham. He scored an own goal in the closing seconds.
Surely that's been taken over by Leroy Fer now. He's been relegated with three clubs.
Oh, is Fer on three? I'm not sure what Johnson's on. So well done to Brackley. Good win for them. And the FA VARs, Stockton 0, Thatcham Town 1. A first half penalty from Shane Cooper-Clark. He scored 63 in 58 this season. Charlie Austin signed for Thatcham as an 18-year-old, but left without making an appearance. That's my Thatcham knowledge.
So it's considerably more knowledge than my Thatcham knowledge.
Barry, do you know where Thatcham is?
I have not got a clue.
It's right in Berkshire, isn't it?
And there you are.
A good use for the bunting, you know, celebrate the royal wedding, then celebrate Thatcham's victory next day. They wear blue and white to help out as well.
Oh, that's perfect.
Yeah, it's very nice of them.
Good to get more than one use.
Exactly. You know, bunting's a once-a-year sort of thing.
They didn't really think about how much recycling is necessary after that royal wedding, did they? So well done to Thatcham. The League Two playoffs, Sam says, are Coventry cheating bastards, or is it a witch's curse? They booked their place in the League Two final after a 4-1 win at Notts County. Kev Nolan, absolutely raging. I mean, they were unlucky in the first leg, Notts County, were they? Because Coventry got a penalty that definitely wasn't. There was an offside, there was a goal disallowed for offside from Notts County that shouldn't have been disallowed. But that's football. And now Coventry play Exeter for a place in League One.
You would have to say, I mean, Coventry did ride their luck in over the two legs of that semi-final, but Coventry, if any team in England deserves a bit of luck, it's probably Coventry, because they have had very little in the last 10 years.
20 years. Yeah, you're right.
It's quite interesting that there's sort of two opposite teams where Coventry are packed full of their academy players that have come through, and then Notts County is big Kev Nolan managing, Alan Smith, Chola Amiobi.
John Stead,
yeah.
I just kind of like a team full of old, wily veterans.
He'll need more next season now to get them up. There's this lot of failed.
That's it.
Ian Hart will be in.
They'll find Steve Finnan, wherever he's gone, and David Batty. Right, that'll do for part one. In part two, we will go into Europe. Welcome to the Guardian Football Weekly part two, which will be every bit as fun as part one. Hey, Baz, tomorrow...
Yes.
The 22nd of May,
mm-hmm.
in that there London,
mm-hmm.
we're doing a live show.
Yes, we are.
Joseph Nathan writes, today I ripped my favourite A-grade Mr. Bump sock. For the live pod tomorrow, could we ask single sock owners to bring them in with the possibility of matching up? This would make the day even more special.
I'm wholeheartedly in favour of anything that makes the day more special.
A blind date for socks.
Obviously it's a sellout, but we had the ground, we had an extra stand built overnight.
Oh, excellent.
So there's extra capacity. If you want to come along, the Emmanuel Centre, Central London, 7 o'clock start, me, Glenn Denning, Wilson and Ronay. And yeah, they're fun and... slightly ruder, but not like offensive rude, are they?
Well, it depends.
Depends. After the second bottle of wine, Barry just goes full Father Jack. But it's definitely worth watching. By the way, there will be a World Cup special Football Weekly Live. At some point, it will announce it tomorrow night. So there's a reason to come tomorrow to then come back and watch exactly the same nonsense in about a month's time. But that's exciting. Let's now go to Germany. The German Cup final was very exciting, unlike most of the Cup finals. And our German expert is Archie Rintutz. Archie, how are you?
I'm very well, although I'd say be careful with Jonathan Wilson and the second bottle of wine after experiencing Leon.
Oh, hang on. Tell us more, Archie. How was Wilson in Leon?
He was good. He was good, but very keen. I mean, it's funny how much he likes to impinge historical knowledge on those younger than him. It felt like every time we walked past a historical landmark, it turned into a history test. I was just glad that when we walked past a particular rose window on a church and he said, but where's the first in England? And I said, York. I got a correct and I felt relieved because it felt like I could then move on with my evening.
Yeah, I mean, I sort of worked solidly with Wilson for a year now and I'm coming to the conclusion that he's somewhere between Rain Man and Johnny Five from Short Circuit. it's nice. I wouldn't say it's just people that are significantly younger than him that he treats as history students. Probably more importantly, what a win for Eintracht Frankfurt.
Yes, incredible. I couldn't quite believe how many chances that Bayern Munich spurned in a very similar way to the Real Madrid game. And it's still a real show of character from Eintracht Frankfurt, the way that they were able to ride out this pressure and win their first German Cup in 30 years. Not just that, though, the storyline behind it. So Niko Kovac will, of course, move to Bayern Munich next season. But the biggest piece of drama that you had on Saturday evening was actually to do with VAR. You had that, of course, in the FA Cup final and have had that throughout the season in the Bundesliga, and it's caused much furore throughout the season, and it did so once again on Saturday evening because Bayern Munich should have had a penalty. Now, there wasn't all that much sympathy, I would say, from German fans, because there have been lots of occasions when Bayern have got away with a piece of luck here. And particularly in cup finals, in fact, Mats Hummels, when he was in Borussia Dortmund colours, had a header which went over the goal line a couple of years ago but wasn't given, and Bayern Munich went on to win that cup final. This time, they should have had a penalty when Javi Martinez was brought down by Kevin Prince-Boateng. The referee actually looked at the evidence on VAR and still didn't give it. And you even heard the Frankfurt players going, well, to be honest, we would have had to settle if that was a penalty. From that, another corner got taken and Frankfurt went directly down the other end and scored. And there turned out to be a huge melee behind the goal between the fans who had travelled from Frankfurt and the rest of their players just celebrating.
It was actually that corner because the keeper had come up. But it was such a brilliant sight of just that player running through and all of his teammates, everyone on the sideline, just knowing that they're going to score and just getting ready, sort of invading the pitch before the ball had gone in the net.
Yeah, it was less of a run towards goal, more of a gallop. The way that Gicinovic streaked through, and it you have to say it was so poignant, a way to win a cup final. I think that's a much better way to win it than kind of holding on, if you can go and get that goal, because everyone knew that it was all over. And the celebrations after, I mean, not just after the game, but the next day in Frankfurt as well, 60,000 people turned out in Frankfurt, and there's some great footage of them all jumping up and down, of the players kind of cars being parked on the motorway waiting for the team to arrive from the airport, of players drinking vast quantities of beer, just to fulfill the German stereotype again, of course. And yes, everyone's very, very happy in Frankfurt.
Archie, there's no reason why he should have been, but was Niko Kovac in any way sheepish, or were his celebrations in any way muted because his current team had just beaten his future employers?
No, not at all. In fact, he was crying. He was crying, and he was in absolute bits after the game. You could see that, how much it meant. Because also, there'd been a lot of pressure on him with the whole departure to Bayern Munich. And without this win, I don't know how he would have gone down necessarily as an Eintracht Frankfurt coach. He'd done remarkable work with them, but this really does add the gloss to it and will mean that he will be remembered there in very high regard. There's something to be said for the way that the Bayern players actually reacted after the game. There's been a lot of controversy over the fact that they didn't stay and watch Frankfurt go and actually lift the cup, and just went straight into the dressing room. Only two players, only Manuel Neuer and Tom Starke, two goalkeepers. Neuer didn't actually start the game, even though he was deemed fit enough to be on the bench. The rest of the team just went into the dressing room and didn't bother seeing it. Now, there have been players who have been pleading innocent that they didn't realise they had to stay. Others who have just apologised. But I think, frankly, it's poor form, and it won't endear Bayern Munich any further to Germany. Not that I'm sure that they actually care that much. But yeah, for Kovac as well, he was delighted. He got a very cold and huge beer shower in the press conference after from all his players. There's a fantastic photo of his look of shock as the beer kind of comes over his head at one point. So yeah, he was very happy and very emotional. But to be honest, Barry, I wasn't sure how exactly he was going to get on at Bayern Munich. I'm still not sure whether he will be a roaring success. Thomas Müller, in fact, on a collage for Jupp Heynckes last weekend, all the players from Bayern wrote farewell messages. And Thomas Müller wrote, "See you in October." Which I don't think was necessarily the biggest endorsement of Kovac, but that, to be honest, that, I I think that's Thomas Muller playing around and just having a joke. But there is a part of it where you're going, you know what, he might be right, but I think this time Jupp Heynckes' door will be firmly shut should Bayern come knocking again.
Archie, thank you as always.
Cheers, Max.
Archie Winter out in Germany. In Italy, this was fun, wasn't it, in the race for the final Champions League spot, Lazio versus Inter. So going into the game, Lazio were fourth, 3 points ahead of Inter. The other game had been a goalless draw, so it's on head-to-head. A win for Inter would see them go above Lazio on head-to-head, while Lazio just needed to avoid defeat to play in the group stages of the Champions League for the first time since 2007-2008. Lazio were 2-1 up with 15 minutes left. Pippo Inzaghi took off Ciro Immobile, who at the time was Serie A's top scorer, brought on Jordan Lukaku, Romelu's brother, who's a left-back, took off one centre-back and replaced him with another one. And the captain, who's left-back, Senad Lulic, went up front for some reason that I don't quite understand.
And then got himself sent off.
And then he got himself sent off. And Stefan de Vrij. Tell the story, Priya.
So Stefan de Vrij, his contract expires in the summer, and he's been in a lot of discussions with Lazio about, and he's kind of made it clear that he won't be extending his contract. And for months now, has been reported to already have a deal in place with Inter to join them next year. So, with around 15 or less than that to go, he gives away the penalty from which Inter equalise. And I believe Icardi then equals Ciro Immobile as top scorer in Serie A. Eventually, then Inter go on to get the winner, and De Vrij gets subbed off. And I wouldn't want to be him in that Lazio dressing room afterwards.
So, is there any suspicion? Was it a totally needless challenge from De Vrij?
It wasn't. It was actually, in fairness to him, I feel like he actually played a pretty good game. And a few weeks ago, was one of Lazio's best players in a game that might have, not even got them to this position where they were fighting Inter for this qualification. But I'm pretty sure, given the situation, if you present it that way, he's basically ensured he's going to play Champions League football next year. And there's always that theory that you want to make the best of what you can for your future.
Napoli beat Crotone 2-1. That sent Crotone down on a day when there were five teams who could have been relegated. The team who started the day in 18th ended it there. That brings an end to Crotone's two-year spell in Serie A. They finished 17th last season, only surviving by leapfrogging Empoli on the final day. Couldn't do the business again this time. Two sides promoted from Serie B last season find themselves going down with Crotone, Hellas Verona, and everyone's favourite, Benevento.
Parma are back, aren't they? They've been promoted to Serie A, everyone's favourite.
Back-to-back promotions, is it?
Yeah.
Faustino Asprilla still putting him away for them?
Yeah, Thomas Brolin.
Buffon will go back.
I could do.
Yeah.
He's off to PSG, isn't he?
Don't ruin my dream.
Buffon to PSG, is that
that's what the rumour mill currently says.
To be the first choice?
I'm not sure, but he's on a free, and PSG might need a good backup keeper.
He should go back
keeper.
To Parma.
Yeah. Bit of romance. What we all need in football in this terrible era of money and misery.
He should go there and get paid. Luke Chadwick left MK Dons for Cambridge United, took a pay cut.
And I had a tear in my eye for that.
Just because he wanted to play for the year. He said scoring for Cambridge United was better than playing in the Champions League for Manchester United. That's a hero. That result, by the way, for Napoli, their win, gave them a slightly unwanted record. No team has got 91 points in Serie A without winning the title. But Juventus got 95 points, and you need the most points, Barry, to win the league. That's how it worked.
So unfair.
Isn't it? Napoli released a statement slamming Juve players for shameful and offensive behaviour during their Scudetto celebrations. During their event, some players, including Blaise Matuidi, Douglas Costa, made live Instagram videos that caught some distasteful banners. There was a shirt that read Napoli bleep. There were cutouts of coffin lids in Napoli colours with Lorenzo Insigne's name on it.
That's pretty distasteful. Well,
it is pretty distasteful, yeah. They said this is from Napoli's Twitter account. We're truly appalled by the shameful and offensive attitude shown by some of the Juve players today. These are serious gestures that offend the dignity of a people and of a Neapolitan like Insigne. It's unacceptable. I suppose if you're waving an Instagram phone around, you know. You
can't. To be fair, if you're going to win the league every year, you've got to come up with different ways to celebrate. It's quite hard after, you know, the 14th on the trot or whatever it is now.
So you're saying by this time you're allowed to get as offensive?
Yeah, exactly,
as
you like, yeah.
Napoli once posted a statement condemning me on their website.
Did they? What for?
I made a very lame gag in passing.
Yes. Doesn't sound like you.
In an episode of the Rumour Mill, where there was a rumour linking Danny Welbeck to Napoli, and I'd said something about them making him an offer he couldn't refuse, and someone picked up on it, and then lots of Napoli fans, it just gathered momentum, and lots of Napoli fans got very cross at me on Twitter, and then the statement, or the club issued a statement on the website. So yeah, I just for drawing attention to the fact that, you know, Napoli does have some, or Naples does have something of a reputation for the Gomorra, and they were saying, oh, well, you know, you should focus on the nice things in Naples, like ice cream and the beautiful scenery and all that, which, you know, I'd love to go to Naples. I've never been, and I probably can't go now because I'd be too scared.
Have you been forgiven? Do you know?
But the head of the EU, who at the time was from Naples, I think, he also chimed in, inviting me to visit Naples.
Huh.
I think in a nice way.
I've been in, during a bin strike. So the bin workers are off. I don't know what that was related to. No, definitely not any sort of mafia.
So in January, Ajax's Amin Younes was reported to have an agreement in place with Napoli, and then was apparently scared away from Napoli because of it's a ridiculous story where apparently he landed in Italy to do his medical, and apparently came face to face with like members of the mafia. And then was really put off the move and went back on his word to sign for Napoli. And then he was meant to sign in the summer. And it's really odd. So but the Napoli fans basically hate him now. The kind of abuse he received was insane, because it's basically saying Napoli's just a city of crime and you know, fear and, yeah.
I would just like to reiterate that I don't think any of those things whatsoever.
And I'd just like to say my name is James Richardson. It was Gigi Buffon's last game. Emotional substitution when Juve were 2-0 up with about half an hour to play. But he's off to PSG, so it's not as exciting now, is it? Unless he goes to Parma, Will. Don't worry. Talking of goodbyes, La Liga had a couple of them. Iniesta's leaving due. How was it for everyone?
Well, it was ruined. You know, he got a great send-off from the Pack Camp Nou, embraced all his teammates, all the rival players, the match officials on his way off, hugs for everyone in the dugout. And then after the game, when the fans were, you know, stayed behind, chanting, singing, chanting his name, paying homage to this great club servant, they wheeled out an idiot DJ and his decks into the middle of the pitch, and he proceeded to play what sounded like a Queen medley. And just another nail in the coffin of all that's, you know, I don't understand why stadiums are obsessed with trying to create an atmosphere where there's no need to do so, you know, and there certainly was no need to do so at Camp Nou last night.
Are you looking forward to Dua Lipa performing at the Champions League final, Barry?
Can you tell us a bit more about Dua Lipa?
She's great. I think she's actually great. I'm not sure a football final is particularly the stage for it, but her songs are genuinely pretty good.
Okay. I mean, I've learned it's a woman now, so that's it's a start. I thought it was at least, I imagined it was two people. It's just one.
Just one,
yeah. Where's she from?
She's British, I think, but I think she's originally from Albania.
Okay.
But a really good few hit singles in the recent past.
What is it? What would we call it? Would we just call it modern pop?
Pop.
Okay.
I quite enjoyed with Iniesta. They took him off so they could replace him with the future of the club, Paco Alcacer. So, nice handing over of the baton.
Fernando Torres scored a couple in his final game for Atletico. They were held 2-2. So that was nice for Fernando, wasn't it?
It's just really nice that he got to sign off with the trophy in the Europa League, and also now
they should have brought him on earlier in that, shouldn't they?
Yeah, probably.
I think so.
But it's nice that he gets his nice send off because he endured such a horrid time in England over the few years he spent at Chelsea, and it's nice to. And then he was shipped off to Milan, and then was on loan at Atletico, and then eventually signed for them again. And it's just nice that he got to fulfil that arc of going back to his boyhood club,
And obviously he's not retiring, so he's probably got an adventure in China or something impending. But it was really nice, and he got really emotional at the end.
What do you make of this Jamie Vardy to Atletico rumour? I mean,
I think it would be great.
I think it would be brilliant.
First I've heard of it.
Yeah. Oh, well, Jamie Vardy, apparently, Atletico want him. You can see him.
They apparently want him as an Antoine Griezmann replacement, who's off to Barcelona.
Why not?
I think it would be a lot of fun.
But I think he would fit and really work in that Simeone
setup. Vardy and
setup.
Diego Costa. It's just the dream strike pairing for a team like Atletico.
But you know, genuinely, no centre-back would ever want to play against Vardy and Costa. You just wouldn't want to play.
He's a player you don't get in Spain that often. And I think, you know, if they signed Danny Drinkwater to send the balls over the top as well, it'd be perfect. But he's got pace getting behind in Spain. It'd be a nice addition. I don't see why not.
A story also from Spain that 2,000 Real Madrid fans have had to give their Champions League tickets back just because Kiev is impossible to get to and too expensive to stay in.
Yeah, well, I mean, Liverpool fans are having similar problems and UEFA don't care.
Which is a shame, isn't it?
It is a shame. You know, it's being made very difficult for the few supporters that have got tickets. It's been made very difficult for them to go and see their teams, and that's not right.
In France, Ligue 1, Priya, all you want to talk about is Memphis Depay.
Absolutely. There's been a lot of fanfare around Nabil Fekir, and he was, to be fair, really instrumental in the first goal. But Memphis Depay, so Lyon were 2-0 down and needed a win to ensure Champions League football, took the game by the scruff of the neck, scored a hat-trick, and Lyon won 3-2. And he's got identical figures to Neymar in Ligue 1, 19 goals and 13 assists. And he's contributed to as many league goals as Cristiano Ronaldo. Not making any explicit comparisons there, but it's just really nice that he kind of has or is going on to deliver on his promise, because he had loads of it at PSV and just seemed a bit wasted at Man United. And that's down to a lot of factors, obviously, but it's wonderful to see him in that Lyon team with the likes of Fekir and Traore, and they've got a lovely midfield duo in Tanguy Ndombele and Houssam Aouar as well. And it's just fair that we get to see him in the Champions League next season, because they're a brilliant team. Obviously, probably without Fekir next season, at least.
Yeah, gutting for Marseille, though, because that win qualified them for the Champions League. 1 point above Marseille, the beaten finalists in the Europa League.
Twice in a week.
That's not how you want your season to finish, is it? Turkey was fun, Will, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, the top four ended with 4 points between them, which is quite impressive, especially when you look at the dullness of the Premier League. And then went down to the last day after Fenerbahce conveniently won 7-0 the week before to make their goal difference with Galatasaray equal.
Was that game are you just suggesting anything there, Will?
No, your eyebrows are, though.
Okay, right.
And it all perfectly legit. And went down to the last day. Galatasaray just needed a point. They won, thanks to Bafé Gomez, who ended up with more goals than Swansea in the season, playing fewer games. It was all
more goals than the entire team of Swansea?
Yeah.
Christ.
Oh, I miss Bafété Gomez. Ellis James says, you know, first time I think we ever interviewed him, and he was sitting quite far back at Swansea. He's got quite poor eyesight and just
Buffy Gomez.
No, Ellis himself, I don't know about Buffy, but he said he just thought it was like a beautiful woman running around the pitch. So on to the Eredivisie minute, Priya, something that we have missed since you've been away. How's it been?
There's not much to talk about, because it's been it was over a week ago. It's been weeks since PSV wrapped up the title and Ajax imploded in amazing fashion, and then Feyenoord went on to pick up the cup, the KNVB Baker. What happened recently is Vitesse qualified for the Europa League, thanks in large part to Mason Mount, who's been absolutely instrumental for them in the last half season. And, well, some people have said he might have been an outsider for the Ingle squad. I don't think that's true, but Mason Mount is definitely someone to look out for, and I hope Chelsea make the most of him. And Dick Advocaat's Sparta Rotterdam were relegated against Dick Lukian's FC Emmen. So FC Emmen will be in the Eredivisie next season, along with the Graafschap, who weirdly have embraced the Joker from the Dark Knight franchise. And they have like this guy who literally dresses up as the Joker, and was interviewed on TV yesterday and they had this massive tifo, and it's just really odd. I really like Dutch football, but it has some really weird characters.
In Australia, they've been having kind of theme weeks. So they had like Star Wars week 1 week. I don't know if you think the game's gone now. A team has embraced the Joker and the A-League are having Star Wars week, whatever. Well, next.
Neither of those is quite as bad as Manchester United painting several of their mascots blue to promote some film.
Avatar?
Well, it must have been Avatar.
It could have been the Smurf movie. I'm pretty much out
that,
now.
That was tantamount to child abuse.
Women's Super League wrapped up this weekend, Priya, as well.
Yeah.
And Chelsea have done superbly well.
Yeah.
And Emma Hayes is just incredible football manager.
It was interesting because Chelsea rotated their lineup significantly for the last game, and against Liverpool, and all of Katie Chapman, Enioluco, and Claire Rafferty got starts because all three of them will be leaving the club this summer. Chapman's retiring, but rumours are Enioluco might be off to somewhere like PSG. But yeah, it was great because they went 2-0 down and looked really out of sorts before Enioluco got them back in the game with a goal, and then lovely, lovely, lovely midfielder Ji-Soo Yoon. Fran Kirby's gotten a lot of plaudits this season, rightfully so, but equally important has been Ji-Soo Yoon in midfield, just making the kind of passes and runs that you really expect from an elite player. And it was great. And they have had an invincible season. And Man City also won 3-0 and were actually really dominant as well. And especially with Nikita Paris, it's probably their player of the season. Has been converted from a sort of winger to a striker now and is really enjoying the new role. And they managed to qualify for Europe by winning yesterday, which is pretty important to them, as their manager Nick Cushing said yesterday. In related news, ex-England international and current assistant to Phil Neville, Casey Stoney's been reported to be lined up for the newly created job of Manchester United women's manager.
Okay, thank you, Priya. Blue faces, Barry. X-Men.
Ah, right, okay.
There we are. Important to get these details right before the trolls arrive. I mean, it could have been the trolls, the movie. Are they blue?
No.
Are they not blue?
I don't think so. Oh, well. But there's only one character in X-Men who has like a blue skin / face.
Who's that?
Mystique. She can change into anyone she wants to. She's basically like a chameleon.
I thought Mystique was a 90s... girl band.
It was.
Oh, what did they sing?
I can't remember.
Anyone?
I'm sure they'll be brought back out to perform at the League Cup final.
Mystique's greatest hits. Here's hoping. Right, that'll do for part two. In part three, we'll discuss the managerial vacancies in the Championship and the Premier League. This is part three of Guardian Football Weekly. Barry, Scandalous was the Mystique song, I'm told.
Yeah, I remember that.
In the break, you gave us a little rendition.
I did.
Want to do it again?
Nope.
Are you saving it for the live show?
That's a couple. We're trying to work out a way to finish the live show on a real high. I believe you singing Mystique. I'm not sure anything could better that.
But it's all about harmonies, isn't it? I need some help.
I'll do the harmony. If you sing the lead, I'll do the harmony. Carlos Carvalho and Paul Lambert have left their respective clubs, Swansea and Stoke. Let's take them one by one, quite briefly. We've mentioned them before. Carvalho, not a surprise, Will?
Not really. You know, his impact had worn off quite a lot, to be honest. You're going to have major changes at Swansea, and do you want him to be the man that does it? Probably not, because he might do a year there, more, best. And the fact that he's got extra press conferences in the Championship due to the 46 matches means he's really going to struggle to find extra metaphors for those. they're looking at, it seems to be younger, more dynamic managers, no offence to Carlos. People like Graham Potter, see if you can get Swan Lake into the Liberty, which would be quite interesting if his methods can
the
transfer.
Swan Lake at Swansea, it's perfect. It's like Arsene Wenger managing Arsenal.
Or maybe it's too much. That's the problem.
Just something on Swansea. It's interesting that with the relegation now, there's opportunity to break out of that cycle where they get someone in mid-season, have that effect of the new manager coming in and then keep him for the new season and inevitably end up sacking him midway through. Like you think of Francesco Gullin and Paul Clement. And yeah, I think they're looking at Graham Potter and I think Stuart James reported also Frank de Boer, which would be very interesting.
Yeah, Chris Coleman, the favourite, even though he definitely says he doesn't want it. Graham Potter, second favourite. Jaap Stam, Cameron Toshack. Who's Cameron?
Stam doesn't have a great reputation from Reading.
No. Cameron Toshack is what, son of...
He's John Toshack's son, and he's under-23's manager. He didn't really have any career, but he seems to have done well at Swansea under-23's, and his name helps.
An old Championship manager name, you know, when you play for so long that they run out of real players, and you get, like, Darren Weggerly, you know.
He was good, though.
Yeah, he was excellent. Stoke, Paul Lambert going more of a surprise, Barry?
I suppose it was a bit, but... I don't think he did a very good job. He talked a good game, but under his watch, I think Stoke should have done more than enough to stay up comfortably. They repeatedly threw away points from winning positions, you know, 12 or 13 under his watch. That's a lot when you're scrapping against relegation. And he seemed to think he would stay and do a good job, and he may well have done a good job, but I'm not. It's not a huge surprise that he's gone.
Gary Rowett 3-1 on David Moyes is 5-1. Mick McCarthy, other names: Nigel Pearson, Kike Sanchez Flores, Big Sam 16-1, Steve Bold 16-1, Graham Potter and Carvalho 25-1, Swansea Alan Pardew 25-1. Have a pound on that. Well done. Just the eye roll there, Barry. It was incredible. Darren Moore given the gig full time at West Brom. I think everybody in the world is pleased for Darren Moore, and we all wish him the best. West Ham looking at Manuel Pellegrini. I'm uninspired, Will.
Yeah, it's, you know, he's won the Premier League. You can't really knock him. He knows Pablo Zabaleta very well. Probably just get the old gang back together. Zabaleta, Yaya Touré is available on a free.
Nigel De Jong,
you know, there's a great, you know, Richard Wright, get him on the bench. They probably need someone with a. They want a bit more of a Latin flair, a bit different from the usual collection of men that are wandering around on the other lists, you know, your Pardews, etc.
It is a bit of like rearranging deck chairs in the Titanic at this point, because West Ham, in other senses, are in quite a shambolic state. They're like administration and the higher ups, the executives, are just pretty sad. And I think David Moyes is probably right to leave.
I mean, there was the story of James Collins finding out by email that after 11 years playing for West Ham, it isn't hard to go up to someone, is it? I mean, whether that's just an administrational thing, or which you presume it is, rather than just bloody mindedness.
Karen Brady's got enough time to write about their fans being keyboard warriors and ruining the season, so she'd probably have time to go and tell James Collins he's unemployed.
You sound like a fan, Will.
I just hate incompetence.
Are we competent?
I'm enjoying it.
Okay, that's good. England's under-17s. They went out on penalties, penalty shootout against the Netherlands. That was in midweek in Chesterfield.
The Netherlands went on to win.
They
last
did.
Night, yeah.
Does that mean there's new hope for Dutch football?
Well, I like to think so, but they've also just as we're recording, appointed Ervin van der Looy as their new under-21 coach. And van der Looy was... in the Netherlands, quite famously recently sacked because his team, he was at Willem II, won against Feyenoord. And then I think his tactics got leaked. And it was just really generic things like dare to play and, you know, they should feel us in the one-on-one duels. And it was really uninspiring. He got sacked by Willem II. And I was just walked into one of probably the most important jobs in the national team setup. And this is really odd. But the under-17s actually did really well. Deshaun Redan, who's the captain, currently plays at Chelsea. And was probably one of the stand-up
players. But you cheated the Irish. Well, the Dutch.
The referees.
Did you see this? We'll see this. We didn't mention it the week when it happened, but this poor Irish.
Yeah.
It's because they're a child as well. It just seems so wrong. I've got a,
well, technically, the referee made the correct decision.
Yeah, but they're it children. So what happened was the Irish keeper came off his line early, saved a penalty. It was crucial that he saved the penalty.
And then he was got a second yellow card for coming off his line and. Because you're not allowed to bring on substitutes during a shootout. It was a retake, and one of the outfield players took his shirt and gloves and failed to save the retake, and the Netherlands went through to face England.
Apparently, the Dutch keeper said after the shootout that both of them had been told before the start. Apparently, they'd be given yellows if they came off their line or whatever. But yeah, it's just a bit upsetting.
No one likes a grass.
No. Yeah.
Absolutely. So really. Congratulations to Ireland for
Thank
winning
you.
The Under-17 European Championships. It was all your work, Barry. Just a couple of things for questions. Yellow Ball says, what do the pod make of Platini's comments around the shenanigans? Interesting on a side note that Russia have a very, very easy group, he says. This is Platini saying that in 1998, the World Cup draw was done so that France and Brazil did not meet until the final. He was telling France Bleu Sport, when we organised the schedule, we did a little trickery. France, Brazil in the final, it was the dream of everyone. If we finished first in the group, Brazil finished first, we could not meet before the final. He laughed as he went on. He was like a Bond villain. We did not spend 6 years organising the World Cup to not do some little shenanigans. Do you think other World Cup hosts did not? Just what an arse. Don't you think? I mean, that was my first crow about it.
Well, there is the famous Argentina in 1978 in the final, and making sure the Netherlands took like a very convoluted route to the stadium for the final, and were like pelted with stones and whatnot. So yeah, he has a point, but he is also Platini, who has a bit of a reputation for this kind of thing now.
Dan says, after Jack Wilshere's tweet, would any of the pod roster ever post a similar tweet about making an impact if left out of the Football Weekly lineup? He said he was disappointed. He said he could do a job and he wished them the best of luck. Matt Law from The Telegraph sort of said, how dare he do this? And I replied going, I think it was pretty reasonable. And now I realise why I very rarely tweet about football, because just the replies have not stopped from just people caring. But...
yeah, what do you want him to say? Yeah. Oh, I shouldn't be in the squad.
Yeah.
You know, I don't deserve a new contract at Arsenal. You know, I just like to go into the background. It's, yeah.
But he had to go back at Matt Law, didn't he? It's asking, what would you know about who gives me advice? And I thought his tweets were completely reasonable. I had a discussion with John Bruin about it on Saturday, and he thought he was sort of agreeing with Matt Law. I thought they were absolutely fine, you know.
I think if you look at Sandro Wagner, who, after he wasn't called up to the squad, retired from international football, I think tweeting saying, best of luck, I would have done a job, is not that bad.
Yeah,
it's quite a nice thing.
There was a message below the line from Ben Evans, who, when we were discussing the England announcement, you know, teenagers on the bus... Ben is 16, listens to the pod, and he said he would like to be the one who shouts Ronnie down the camera for our World Cup schedule. Mikey says, are you doing daily World Cup pods like your predecessor used to do? Hashtag lazy bugger. Mikey, the answer is yes. And they will be amazing. And I'll be very sleepy by the end of the World Cup.
You're not lazy. We made it for an 8 a.m. today.
Well, absolutely right. Lazy. Yeah. And I think we've all been very sort of awake for the whole thing.
Thanks for the coffee.
Hey, it's a pleasure. I don't like to talk about my charity work. Priya, thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
Will, great debut, thank you.
Here to help.
Come again.
Oh, thanks so much. No wonder that I've been brought in for the dailies. Get me in.
Exactly. Yeah. Are you ready? Every day. Barry, cheers.
You're welcome.
We'll be back on Thursday.
For more great podcasts from The Guardian, just go to theguardian.com/podcasts.